The terrorist and the policeman both come from the same basket. Revolution, legality, countermoves in the same game. Forms of idleness, at bottom, identical. Joseph Conrad, the secret agent. The Prince of Darkness is a gentleman. William Shakespeare, King Lear. Part 1. Tricks. The supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting. Sun Tzu, The Art of War. Chapter 1. Prisoner number 322/88, he was known to the prison authorities as Bauman, though that was not his name at birth, had been planning this day with meticulous precision for quite some time. He rose from bed very early and, as he did every morning, peered through the narrow barred window at the verdant mountainside that glittered emerald in the strong South African sunlight. Turning his gaze, he located the tiny, shimmering patch of ocean just barely visible. He took in the distant caw of the seagulls. He could hear the jingling of chains worn by the most dangerous convicts as they tossed and turned in their sleep, and the barking of the Alsatians in the kennels next to the prison building. Dropping to the cold concrete floor, he began his morning ritual, a series of limbering stretches, 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups. Then, his blood pumping vigorously, he showered. By the standards of the outside world, Bauman's solitary cell was cramped and narrow, but it had its own shower and a toilet, a bed, a table, and a chair. He was in his early 40s, but might have been taken for a decade younger, and he was strikingly handsome. His hair was full, black, and wavy, only slightly sprinkled with gray. His closely trimmed beard accentuated a jaw that was strong and sharp. His nose was prominent but aquiline. Beneath a heavy brow, his complexion was the olive so prevalent in Mediterranean countries. Bauman might have been mistaken for a southern Italian or a Greek were it not for his eyes, which were a brilliant, clear, and penetrating blue, fringed by long eyelashes. When he smiled, which was rarely and only when he wanted to charm, his grin was radiant, his teeth perfect and brilliantly white. In his 6 years in Polesmoor Prison, he'd been able to achieve a level of physical training he could never have otherwise. He had always been remarkably fit, but now his physique was powerful, even magnificent. For when he wasn't reading, there was little else to do but calisthenics and Hwa Reng Do, the little-known Korean martial art he had spent years perfecting. He changed into his blue prison uniform, which, like everything he wore, was stenciled with the number 4, indicating that it was property of his section of Polesmoor Prison. Then, making his bed as usual, he began what he knew would be a long day. Polesmoor Prison is located just outside Cape Town, South Africa, on land that was once a racetrack and several farms. Surrounded by high stone walls, topped with electrified razor wire fences, it is a rolling landscape of palm and blue gum trees. The warders and their families live within the prison walls in comfortable apartments with access to recreation centers, swimming pools, and gardens. The 4,000 prisoners normally incarcerated here are kept in conditions of legendary squalor and severity. Polesmoor, one of only 11 maximum security prisons in South Africa, never had the fearsome reputation of the now-defunct Robben Island, South Africa's Alcatraz, the rocky island off the Cape Peninsula coast isolated by icy, ferocious waves. But it succeeded Robben Island as the repository for those South Africa considered its most dangerous criminals, a group that included first-degree murderers and rapists, and, once, political dissidents who battled apartheid. It was here that Nelson Mandela completed the last few years of his quarter-century prison sentence after Robben Island was closed and converted into a museum. Bauman had been moved here in a van, in leg irons with 20 others, from Pretoria Central Prison immediately following his secret trial. To most of the Boers, or warders, and all of his fellow inmates, prisoner number 322/88 was a mystery. He almost always kept to himself and rarely spoke. At supper, he sat alone, quietly eating his rotten vegetables, the maize and cowpeas glistening with chunks of fat. During exercise periods in the yard, he invariably did calisthenics and Hua Rang Do. After lockup, rather than watching a movie or television like everyone else, he read books. An enormous and peculiar range of books, ranging from histories of the atomic bomb or of the international oil business, to biographies of Churchill or Nietzsche, an exposé of a recent Wall Street scandal, Max Weber's The Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism, and a treatise on 16th-century Italian Renaissance architecture. The other prisoners, called bandita or scullies, smoked contraband Zolls, long homemade cigarettes wrapped in brown paper, while Bauman smoked Rothmans. No one knew how he had got them. He never took part in the smuggling schemes of the others, nor joined in their escape attempts, which were usually amateurish and always failed, ending in capture or, most often, death. Nor was he a member of any of the numerous gangs, which, with the encouragement of the prison officials, controlled the inmate population. These were rigid, highly stratified organizations controlled by governing councils called krings. They engaged in ritual killings, beheadings, dismemberment, even cannibalism. They were hostile to non-members, whom they called mupatas, or sheep. Once, a few days after Bauman had arrived at Polsmoor, one of the gangs dispatched their most vicious Lani, a leader serving a long sentence whom everyone knew to avoid, to threaten him in the exercise yard. The Lani was found brutally murdered, so horribly mangled, in fact, that the men who discovered him, all hardened men, were sickened. Several inmates were unlucky enough to witness the act, which was done quickly and efficiently. The most terrible thing about it was that even in the thick of the struggle, there was no visible change in Bauman's glacial demeanor. Afterward, no one would ever admit having seen the killing. Bauman was treated with respect and left alone. About Bauman, it was known only that he was serving a life sentence and that he had recently been reassigned from kitchen duty to the auto shop, where repair work was done on the prison officials' cars. It was rumored that he had once been employed by the South African government, that he used to work for the State Intelligence and Secret Service, once called the Bureau for State Security, or BOSS, and now called the National Intelligence Service.